Good morning. This meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee will come to order. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, and the time is 8:02 a.m. Members currently present include Representative Reback, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Thompson, Representative Jackson, Representative Co-Chair Representative Hannon, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Drummond. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. You know the drill. And today our recording secretary is Lori Rowland, and Doug Bridges is our LIO moderator assisting with teleconferencing support. Thank you both. My staff, Sarah Khalifi, is our committee aide. If you have any notes to pass, please route them through Sarah. We have a full schedule today, and noting that Representative Klayman has joined us, we will start with House Bill 56, an act establishing May 15th of each year as Hmong American Veterans Day. My intention is to move this bill from committee today. Following House Bill 56, we will be hearing House Bill 32, Alaska Energy Efficiency Loans and Eligibility by Representative Christ Tompkins. Third, we will hear House Bill 70, Mandatory Physical Activity in Schools and Play Day by Representative Rasmussen. First up, we have House Bill 56. Representative Tarr, would you like to come to the table and introduce yourself?
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to have the second hearing. I don't know if there are any questions from committee members, but happy to try and answer any if there are, and appreciate your time.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Let's see. This bill was introduced at our last meeting. We had public testimony on the bill. No amendments have been submitted to my office. Do any members have any questions for the bill sponsor? Well, that was quick. Hearing none, Representative Tarr, would you like to offer any closing comments on House Bill 56?
Thank you. I know we have a lot of important work happening with the budget, but I think this is something important because whenever we do something to honor the people that are our neighbors, especially for their service to our country, I think we're doing the right thing. So I appreciate you taking the time, and we'll let you get to your very busy meeting.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Hearing no, any questions from the, any comments from members of the committee? All right. Hearing no other questions or comments, Madam Co-Chair, may I have a motion to move this bill?
I move version 31LS0338/A from Community and Regional Affairs Committee with attached zero fiscal note.
I see no objections. Hearing none, the bill passes. I'm going to take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. I'd like to thank Representative Tarr for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Back on the record. Next up, we have House Bill 32. My intention is to hear the bill and to take public testimony today and set the bill aside till our next meeting. Representative Christ Tompkins, please come forward with your staff, if any, and introduce yourselves for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, District 35. Here to present on House Bill 32. I can provide some history on House Bill 32. This is the third legislature this piece of legislation has been introduced, and take a little history adventure. Two legislatures ago, this piece of legislation passed out of three committees of referral and died in House rules. And last legislature, this piece of legislation passed out of all the committees in the House and passed the House of Representatives in identical form to what you have before you, 35-1. You might be able to guess who the nay vote was. And moved on to the Senate and died in its last committee referral in the Senate late last spring. And so the bill is back. it's my sort of hope and aspiration that it can get all the way through, including the last committee referral, this go around. House Bill 32 is a relatively simple bill. It relates to the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund and broadens eligibility to the AEERLF, which is a bond authorized revolving loan fund, to include nonprofits. Presently, the eligible entities for the AEERLF are municipalities and state government. So this allows churches and arts councils and housing authorities and other soup kitchens, you name it, that might have energy inefficient buildings and are cash poor, don't have a lot of ability to make upfront capital investment, even if there's great payback periods on those upfront capital investments, to be able to access money from the AEERLF, assuming there's an energy audit and the other requirements in place, to be able to finance those energy efficiency improvements and the servicing of that loan is paid through the reduced energy costs of that building until the loan is paid back. That is HB 32 in a nutshell, at least as I can think of it at this hour in the morning, but I'll defer to John in my office for any points that I missed.
All right. Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Jackson.
Good morning. I'm curious, why do you think it died?
Representative Jackson, through the chair, that would be a good question for the co-chair of Senate Finance, who's no longer in the legislature.
Follow up, Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So who would be responsible for, you said a bond? These would come in forms of a bond?
Representative Jackson, through the chair, a loan.
Okay.
Revolving loan fund.
Okay. So if a nonprofit can't make the payments, who would be responsible to make those payments?
I'm going to defer to John in my office, but sort of a quick upfront thought, which is, as I understand the operation of the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund, including right now with entities presently eligible, those being municipalities and state government, a loan from the revolving loan fund is only given if the entity has a building with basically demonstrated energy inefficiencies, leaky windows and doors and no insulation in the roof or whatever it might be. And an energy auditor needs to come in and say, oh, well, if you do this and this and this, you replace these doors and windows and put in this insulation, that's going to result in $325 a month in energy savings. And you can only get a loan from the fund when you've had that energy audit and the numbers get crunched. And then when you're paying back the loan, again, I might be somewhat simplifying it, and John can correct me, or the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation can correct me, but that entity then pays back $325 a month to repay the loan. So it's like their energy costs never change. So the $325 basically serve as paying back the loan. So the risk of repayment for any entity, I think, is relatively low, because assuming they've been able in the past to pay for their energy costs, I mean, if they're existing and they're doing that, then they're sort of ipso facto able to repay the loan. That said, there's always the possibility that a nonprofit could just go bankrupt for bigger reasons or other reasons beyond this. But I've always found the Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund to be kind of elegantly or cleverly structured in that way, because it's like nothing really changes on the borrower side. It's just their building gets more efficient, those savings pay back the loan. I don't know if that helps answer the question.
Go ahead, Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So why limit it to nonprofits? Why not open it up to, like, small and independent businesses, just out of curiosity?
Yeah. Representative Jackson, through the chair, and still as an ID, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, District 35. That's a good question. I think that the thinking is with nonprofits is twofold. Generally, because they're not-for-profit and usually serving some public interest, aren't exactly rolling around in cash. And so, I mean, this idea came about with NSICA, a nonprofit that I know that sort of has title and works out of a bunch of 100-plus-year-old buildings that, like most 100-plus-year-old buildings, have, you know, single-pane windows and no insulation in the walls, and their energy bill is through the roof. But, you know, they're kind of a they don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting around, even though sort of it pencils out pretty competitively to be able to finance energy efficiency improvements. So I guess the first thought to your question, Representative Jackson, a good one, I would add, is the nonprofit sector, just sort of by dint of being the nonprofit sector, generally is pretty cash poor in terms of upfront capital investment. The second thought is when I was introducing this bill, it was actually kind of towards the beginning of when the state of Alaska was starting to run budget deficits. Not too many years prior, the gravy train had been running, and sort of any and every entity that wanted cash to make their building better just came to the legislature with their hand outstretched and asked for a capital grant. And so part of the thinking and motivation, and it's still true, of HB 32 is, instead of nonprofits sort of having their problems partly solved by getting basically free money in the form of a capital appropriation to help, to give them a tool to be more self-sufficient by being able to sort of, if you will, solve their own problems, and this sort of being a means to that end. I guess a broader thought is, like, many of these nonprofits serve roles in our communities, you know, from chambers of commerce to arts councils to food banks to whatever, that, I mean, I think we all sort of see as having some degree of good and often delivering those services more economically than government does. And so I think there's an assumption baked into this that that's a good thing and we want to help.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Jackson. Any further questions?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, I am not sure if you can answer those or if AHFC is online to answer questions about the loan program's success so far, like how many loans are out there. John lit up, so maybe he had to do the homework and knows this. How successful has the program been, and can we afford to expand it?
Thank you, Representative Hannon. I just want to point out that we do have Stacey Barnes on the phone from Alaska Housing, should the sponsor not be able to answer your question.
For the record, John Scanlon, staff to Rob Christ Tompkins. Through the chair, Chair Hannon, the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program was created in 2010, and it allowed the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to bond up to $250 million to finance these energy efficiency improvements. Since 2010, to the best of my knowledge, and HFC can confirm this, one loan has been closed in that time to the city of Galena for $2.5 million.
All right, Ms. Barnes, Stacey Barnes with Alaska Housing, are you on the phone with us?
Hello, Madam Chair. Yes, this is Stacey Barnes from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Yes, thank you. Is Mr. Scanlon's assessment of the current situation accurate?
Yes, Madam Chair, it is. There has been one loan closed.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, could you tell us how many loans have been applied for? What's your vision of growth and potential? I assume closed means fully executed and repaid. So how many loans do we have out there? How many entities do we expect to be able to expand this to?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, again, Stacey Barnes for the record. And AHFC has had some interest in the loan program over the years. And in fact, if you don't mind, I'll give a little bit of context with the Anchorage municipal election that's happening today, I looked at the Anchorage School District bond proposal that voters are asked to vote on. There's almost a little more than $59 million in projects there. And of them, there are a number of roof projects and mechanical projects that, as an example, might be eligible for this loan, totaling about $30 million. And there are a variety of reasons that the Anchorage School District, as an example, would not come to Alaska Housing for a loan. With this bill, we see it as being one more tool in the toolbox. A Community Reinvestment Act made pricing competitive for nonprofits and public entities to go elsewhere, whether it's through a bond proposal like Anchorage voters are being asked to vote on today, or if it's other sources of financing across the state and in the private sector.
Representative Hannah, follow-up.
Thank you, through the chair. So Ms. Barnes, has only one loan been even given out since 2010, and that's the Galena loan?
Yes, through the chair, Yes, Representative Hannah, through the chair, that is correct. The one loan to Galena is the only loan that has been closed on this program since 2010.
Okay, so in the, excuse me, through the chair. So in this context, this is that inverted language, so closed means opened.
Yes.
Only one entity is carrying a loan under this program currently.
That's correct. And financing may be available up to 15 years for any given project, so that the Galena loan is still active and open on our books.
One more follow-up.
Go ahead, Representative Hannah.
Have you heard from any public entities about needing more flexibility in it? I guess I'm sort of surprised that only one entity has applied, because I presume that every small to medium-sized public entity across the state of Alaska has buildings with huge energy inefficiencies and should be looking at this to reduce their overall heating costs. And wondering whether they don't know about it, or have they given you any feedback that has derailed them from indicating why they haven't applied or not been successful in completing a loan?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, Alaska Housing has a couple of different departments that are involved in these loans. One is our research and rural development, or our energy department. The other is our mortgage or financing and financing department. Our energy department has been very aggressive in talking with leaders all across the state through the Alaska Municipal League and others. So there has been interest in the program, but in many cases, local communities, again, may choose to bond on their own or have found cheaper financing elsewhere. Again, Alaska Housing views itself as just one tool in the toolbox. And as we look through the letters of support that were in front of you, I think one misconception is that this loan would be a low or subsidized rate, low-cost financing, and that is not necessarily true. So there may be other options that are in the best interest of the nonprofit or local government to be able to access financing outside of the corporation.
Okay, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I remember correctly, they're kind of paralleling this legislation from 2010. We had energy efficiency evaluations out in a lot of rural areas to determine, you know, what kind of problems they have and what kind of savings they could have. And, you know, we're talking 2011, 12, 13, 14, when there was a lot of capital money. So a lot of these entities out there were evaluated. It was shown where they could save a lot of money on energy with redoing their windows and re-insulating and things like that. But at that time, capital was flowing so well that they didn't want to take any bonding or loans. They wanted their handout waiting for a grant. So there was that stopped a lot of this happening as it should have. But if I remember correctly, we did have evaluations out there and energy efficiency evaluations, and there's a lot of places out there that could still benefit from this.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Thompson.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee for Ms. Barnes or the presenters?
Madam Chair, may I respond to that?
Go ahead, Ms. Barnes.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Thompson, you are absolutely correct. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation received some money through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, federal money, and we were able to go out and benchmark 1,300 public facilities and do what we call investment grade audits on 327 public buildings. We did see that the potential was great at the time, but you'll also recall that the price of oil was at over $100 a barrel, and so the energy efficiency savings at that time was also greater than it is in this current environment.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes. Representative Rivak.
I have a question. Josh Rivak, District 25, through the chair. Thank you so much. Help me understand. I don't fully understand this, so forgive me if this question is a bit elementary, but the loan that you provided, I guess first question is, what was the total cost of the loan in relation to the estimate? Do you know, was it more or less or right on par with the estimate of the work?
Representative Rivak, I'm sorry, the question regarding the Galena loan?
The question, I'm wondering if the work that was done was in line with the estimate, or was it over the estimate or under the estimated cost of the remodeling project?
The loan itself was consistent with the estimate that was provided through the investment grade audit that had been performed prior to closing of the loan.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
So through the chair, I'm wondering what happens in the event that the loan or that the work done, say they run into problems and they run late and over cost. What happens in the event that that's the case? The reason I'm asking is because it sounded like at the end of the day, the customer doesn't save any money. They get a loan, they get a more efficient building, their cost ends up the same, and I'm just assuming that that's under the estimate that's provided for the work to be done. So what if it goes way over estimate? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Through the chair, Representative Rivak, so AHSC would close the loan after completion of the work. So we would know exactly what those costs were prior to closing of the loan.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to compliment in response to Representative Rivak, just to clarify, as soon as the loan is paid back, you've got the more energy efficient building, and then the nonprofit entity would also then be saving money because then their energy bill would come down to actuals. And I think in the sort of pulled out of thin air example I gave earlier of $325 a month in energy savings for some small nonprofit, then once the loan is paid back, then the nonprofit would basically be enjoying those $325 a month savings. So after the loan is paid back, there are actual savings for the nonprofit entity, or in the case of Galena, the city government, once they repay the loan.
All right. Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, the interest rate of these loans, what are the variances, or is it a set interest rate because they are nonprofits, or they would be nonprofits?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, this is Stacey Barnes again. The interest rate would be determined at the time that we're closing the loan, and it would be based on a number of factors, including the duration that the entity would be applying for AHSC. Is it a one-year loan or is it a 15-year loan, as an example? So that's just one example of the factors that would go into it, along with the risk associated with that particular loan.
All right. Any Representative Hannon, go ahead.
Thank you, through the chair. Can you, Ms. Barnes, can you tell us the duration of the Galena loan and what its rate is?
sorry, you cut out there a bit. Could you repeat the question, please?
If you could tell us the specifics of the Galena loan, both its length and loan rate.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm here with Eric Cavalock from our mortgage department, and I'm going to ask him to respond to that question. And we may have to actually get back to you in writing.
Through the chair, this is Eric Havelock. I'm the lending officer for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I apologize for not having that data directly in front of me, as it was a couple years ago, but the term was 15 years, and I believe, to the best of my recollection, the interest rate was just under 4%.
Thank you. Representative Hannon? Okay, thank you. Any further questions from the committee for the folks online right now? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Barnes and Mr. Lavlock. I'm sorry I didn't quite get your name clearly. If you'd stay on the line, we may have more questions for you. We do have some invited testimony on this bill from Chris Rose of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. Mr. Rose, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Okay, good morning. You know the drill.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Was actually involved in the Mr. Rose, you have faded away.
Back in 2010, which was an energy omnibus
what happened?
Bill that included the creation of the
At ease. Mr. Rose? Can you hear us? Does anybody have his phone number? Okay, thank you.
Collectively, we estimate that Alaska are spending $5 billion worth of energy, $5 billion on energy every year. That's including transportation fuel and electricity and heating. So that's a lot of money. And given the success that HFC has had in its residential program,
Mr. Rose?
There has been a huge amount of money saved on energy efficiency over the last 10 years or so. 2008, the legislature made a large appropriation to the weatherization rebate programs that continued on for several years. Over 50,000 homes have been energy retrofitted, and HFC estimates that the average savings for those homes has been 30%. But we know that there's a large amount of savings to be had out there, and we believe that it's very, very important that we continue to push energy efficiency. This is, as I think Representative Price Tompkins stated in his testimony, just another tool in the toolbox. And we believe that if it is open to nonprofits, that there will be some decision makers out there from these nonprofits who will say that this is an opportunity that they would like to take. As has been discussed already in some of the testimony, for various reasons, some of the original targets for this loan program have not decided to take loans. And one of them, I think Representative Thompson hit on, which is that for a long time and probably still today, some nonprofits or public buildings have either continued to bond on their own or hope that the state would have some money for them. Those are just not real options for a lot of nonprofits that would be able to borrow money through the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund if this bill were to pass. I also wanted to just touch on one of the questions about the payback periods. The payback periods for different types of energy efficiency improvements and retrofits vary, but I think this is happening all around the country pretty scientifically at this point, where it's pretty easy to estimate what an improvement will cost and what its payback period will be, and then to structure the loan so that an entity does not borrow too much money. You don't want to give people money for a 20-year payback if the loan term is only a 15-year loan. So the loans are definitely structured up front so that there is an awareness of how much energy savings is going to be had and how much the loan is going to have to be serviced
given the interest rate and the term. So we do believe that this is another opportunity for Alaskans to save money on their energy bills. One other item, too, is that this legislature...
Mr. Rose, can you hear me?
Yes,
I apologize, but you faded out after the first few seconds of your testimony and up until your phrase, there's a large amount of savings out there, we were not able to hear anything. And what has changed? What has changed with your telephone?
I moved about 5 feet, but that usually doesn't make a difference. I'm sorry.
No, you need to stay near it, and if you're on speakerphone, it'd be better if you were not.
No, I am not on speakerphone, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay now?
I can hear you okay. If you would please begin your testimony again up to the point about where you are now. Sorry.
Sure. No problem. Well, I'm not exactly sure where I cut off, but I'll just repeat that there's a huge amount of savings to be had here in the state of Alaska, and a part of the reason that we know that is HFC has had great success with the residential programs. Those were all grants. They were not loans, but I think it proved the business case. When you are able to do energy retrofits, there is a large amount of savings. HFC estimates that the more than 50,000 homes that were retrofitted through their weatherization rebate programs over the last decade or so have saved about 30% on average. So we know that these other types of buildings, whether they be public buildings or nonprofit buildings, will probably have the same opportunity to save 30, even 40% on their energy bills, depending on the shape of the building. So we do see this as another tool in the toolbox. We understand a little bit about the reasons why some of the public buildings did not take up this loan program as much as we thought that they might back in 2010. One of the big reasons being that for a long time, public buildings continued to try to get grants from the legislature, and also, as has been discussed, a lot of public entities have the ability to bond on their own. Those opportunities are definitely lesser opportunities for nonprofits today, and we believe that there are some decision makers at these nonprofits who would take the opportunity to take a loan from AHSC through this fund if they were given the opportunity. I think I'll just end there and answer any questions that the committee may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rose. Any questions? Representative Thompson, go ahead.
Thank you. Trying to remember back after you had done these energy efficiency evaluations, there was quite a variation in loan rates. There were some entities out there. I was wondering if you have any idea of how many of those that that realized that they could have a savings on energy efficiency might have gone to other commercial entities because the interest rate was lower than AHFC's. Seemed like there was quite a variation back in those days. We had a lot of comment and a lot of discussions on some of these things. And then we had some banks come in and say, hey, you're trying to steal all of our business. We can actually meet or beat the AHFC's rate. So any idea of how many places did do the energy efficiency upgrades that maybe didn't use AHFC?
Representative Thompson, through the chair, I don't really have that data, but I think that anecdotally I've heard the same things, that a lot of entities decided that they could find cheaper interest rate somewhere else, or they could bond themselves. I know for a fact that many buildings did go ahead and do energy efficiency anyway, not using this fund. And so that is true that the interest rate may or may not have been competitive for some entities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Any further questions for this testifier? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Rose. If you have your testimony in written form, we would appreciate receiving it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Let's see. I'm now going to open public testimony on House Bill 32. Is there I don't see anyone on the line. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on House Bill 32? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to close public testimony. Any other questions or comments for the sponsor regarding House Bill 32? Representative Klayman.
I thought this was a good bill in the last session. I still think so. Thank you for keeping us going.
All right, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair. There is no fiscal note attached. I presume it is a zero fiscal note because we're just adding new applicants' eligibility, so there's no additional cost to administering it.
Representative Hannon, there is a fiscal note, but it, as you're right, it is a zero fiscal note. That's quite all right. Oh, let's see. We will set the bill aside. Representative Price-Hompkins,
apologies to just squeeze in there. One last thought for the committee's consideration. In response to Representative Thompson's question of HFC, I periodically, well, for, gosh, probably upwards of 4 or 5 years now, have been maintaining some dialogue with DOT and PF and the PF side of DOT and PF, the Public Facilities Division within DOT and PF, about energy efficiency in state buildings. And as was stated previously, the Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund, one of the principal eligible entities is the state of Alaska itself. And we've got a lot of facilities, and not all of them are that energy efficient. And there have been investment-grade audits of many of these facilities demonstrating that, hey, there's some improvements that have pretty competitive paybacks. So I have proceeded through the years to be in touch with DOT and PF about what the agency is sort of thinking about or planning to do to address that and improve the efficiency of these buildings so that they cost less to heat and maintain. To DOT and PF's credit, they have proceeded with some of those energy efficiency improvements, and I was sort of very curious whether the agency would take advantage of the AERLF or seek other capital, and this directly relates to Representative Thompson's question in terms of the sort of absence of interest from presently eligible entities in this revolving loan fund. And the agency put together a package of energy efficiency improvements. I think this was a year and a half ago. The dates are a little faded in my mind, and I think it was a fairly substantial energy efficiency investment package. And as Ms. Barnes testified, DOT and PF actually found a more competitive interest rate elsewhere, sort of meeting or beating, as Representative Thompson said, the AHFC rate went with Bank of America. All that said, and I think Mr. Rose from REAP spoke to this point, for smaller nonprofits that are less sophisticated and don't have access to maybe more institutional capital, I'm sort of cautiously optimistic that this will sort of fill a void that there's currently sort of nobody meeting or sort of serving those financial needs. And that if you're, you know, a small nonprofit and you own a building or two and you're looking at, you know, something not in the millions of dollars in terms of energy efficiency investment, but something much smaller, given the sort of very specialized nature of this lending and that you need to, you know, show an investment grade energy efficiency audit in order to get the loan. It's not like you just sort of walk down to the corner of Wells Fargo and the, you know, the loan officer in the cubicle is, you know, ready to sort of serve this need. But there's sort of a specialized nature of this that I think potentially helps with less sophisticated entities like small nonprofits, which is quite different than certainly many municipal governments and certainly different than the state of Alaska Department of Transportation Public Facilities. So I just wanted to sort of share that note, and I think it sort of corroborates a lot of testimony we've heard, and I try to sort of track and learn about this issue from multiple vantages, and that anecdote I thought was helpful.
Thank you, Representative Christ-Tompkins. I would note that we are currently occupying this, I think it's about an 85-year-old building, the Capitol, which underwent a major renovation in the removal of all the exterior walls, doors, and windows. And I can guarantee you it has made a difference in the comfort of this building and the tightness and all of that stuff. I think it would be fascinating to ask the Legislative Affairs Agency to give us a recap of energy costs prior to that renovation and energy costs now. And I think I will pursue that. And I know that that was, I believe the legislature funded that out of its cash reserves, dating from the time when we had a lot more funds in the hopper. But I'm glad it was done when it was done, because the building is much more habitable now. I don't recall if they were single pane windows, but I do know that they were very leaky, both in terms of air and noise. And it makes all the difference to have this building finished the way it is now. So I'm going to pursue that myself. In the meantime, I would love to move this bill out today, but normally we wait for amendments. So thank you, Representative, and Mr. Scanlon. Let's see. We will take it up again at our next meeting. If any members are interested in offering an amendment to the bill, amendments will be due to my office by noon tomorrow, Wednesday, April 3rd. Thank you. Next up, we have House Bill 70, Mandatory Physical Activity in Schools and Play Day. My intention is to hear the bill and take public testimony today. Ms. Walker? Okay. Why don't you come to the table, introduce yourself for the record, and begin your testimony. Go ahead.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Walker, staff to Representative Sarah Rasmussen. She represents the District 22, which is the Sand Lake area of Anchorage. She apologizes for not being here today. She was not feeling well this morning when she woke up. So I'm here presenting House Bill 70 on her behalf. This bill would require schools to provide a minimum level of physical activity each day for kindergarten through eighth grade students. The bill also establishes the Thursday in February immediately following President's Day as Play Day, which stands for Positive Leadership for Active Alaska Youth. On this day, students around the state would be encouraged to participate in a synchronized physical activity at 10 a.m. It's kind of a fun way to encourage the importance of physical activity. So this bill is one strategy by which we can work toward improving our educational outcomes, combating chronic illness, and building a lifetime commitment to healthy living for students across the state. And I can go through a sectional, if you would like, of the bill. And we also have included in your packet some scientific research that supports that physical activity is linked to increased educational outcomes as well.
Great. Go ahead and go through the sectional.
Yeah. It's a pretty short bill. The first section replaces a may with a shall, which would require the physical activity where right now it's just sort of a recommendation. That requirement would be 90% of the CDC's current recommended level of physical activity. The recommendation right now is 60 minutes, so this bill would require, I believe, 54 minutes, if I did my math right. And it also allows for an exemption from that physical activity for students with that receive credit for participation in athletics. Section 2 establishes Play Day, which is that Thursday in February immediately following President's Day.
All right. Any questions for the bill sponsors, staff? Representative Jackson, go ahead.
Thank you, through the chair. So according to the sponsor statement, there is already a bill requiring 90% of the daily amount of physical activity recommended. So in other words, don't they still have recess for kindergarten up to whatever grade?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, yes, I think the current law as it stands is just a recommendation for that, how many minutes of activity, and so this bill would require the 90% of the CDC's recommendation.
Follow-up? Go ahead.
Follow-up, thank you. And Tess Stevens Foundation pushes Get Out to Play, so they have a full day of outside activity. I think it's like the fourth Saturday in July. So is this kind of redundant on that?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, I am actually not aware of that program. So my apologies.
Follow up.
Go ahead, Representative Jackson.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun. They do a lot of commercials. I love the commercials because it shows the kids going out and play. And I have also volunteered, and it's like all day. It's amazing how many kids come and participate, and parents as well. So my question would be to mandate the Department of Education and also the little beings that would be covered under the Constitution, I'm sure. Is this just pushing a little too hard on what we are demanding? Is my question. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, sorry, I just wanted clarification. Are you talking about requiring the daily physical activity or the play day being?
The play day.
Okay.
Because it's already here in the statutes, you might say, and how much physical activity. So, and the reason for my question is, with this being outside, would the Department of Education have to have volunteers or extended staff for this particular day?
Through the chair, Representative Jackson, I believe the way it's written, it's just a recommendation to say this day at this time, statewide, kids can participate in this. So it wouldn't require anybody to participate in play day. But the part that would be required is that daily physical activity in schools. So the play day piece is kind of separate but thematically linked, if that makes sense.
Representative Jackson, follow-up?
Follow-up.
And then Representative Klayman.
I went and visited a couple of schools last week and went out and played with them on the swings, but I'm just like that we already have recesses, so I'm just confused, maybe is the word, and why we would mandate more.
And just to note that Todd Brocious is on the line from the Department of Education to answer some questions, but let's see what members other questions are at this point. And also I'd like to note that I don't believe this bill would have any impact on activities in July, as that is generally outside the school calendar year. So the foundation that you mentioned earlier, that's a whole different organization, I guess. Representative Klayman, go ahead.
And as a huge proponent of physical activity, exercise. One query I have in light of a lot of the cuts that we've seen to education and the curriculum challenges that the school district across the state are having, if we change the language of this bill from May, which is we often pass bills with May language to say basically shall or encouragement, if we now change this to shall, what impact is that going to have on the current curriculums in the K, this is K through 8, how is that going to impact curriculums, and are the school districts actually prepared to make those changes if we pass this legislation? Because I don't see any letters of support or opposition from the school districts in the file.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I think that would be up to the school districts to kind of determine how they would fit it in. The idea behind the bill is that we are seeing students, especially younger students, struggling with reading across the state and other subjects, and so the research shows that increasing physical activity increases educational outcomes, and so by maybe changing that balance that current not changing but maybe creating some more balance that in the school day to allow for more activity would increase those outcomes.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair. Do you know of all the elementary schools in Anchorage, or actually K through 8 programs in Anchorage, how many of them do not meet the standard currently?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm actually not. I don't have that exact number, but I can find out.
Well, I'm going to start with your district and then expand. Additionally, there is a section 2B on the second page. It begins in line 7 that inserts a policy about a student who receives school credit for participation in athletics, so it's a waiver. That student doesn't have to get it. Do you know how many districts already have that policy in place?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I don't actually know that for sure. I know that
we'll talk.
further questions from the committee members at this time. Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
Thank you. I think I'm sort of similarly curious along the lines of the questions Representative Hannon asked, and I'm like Representative Klayman, fairly active lifestyle oriented, and really value the idea of a healthy life. But that
reportedly
sort of
a fast runner
collides with I think sort of a caution about statewide mandates and requirements of school districts, which is a list that has been growing and growing and growing with years and decades, all well-intentioned, of course, but from blood-borne pathogen and training to that school districts have to do to, I mean, required trainings and require this and require that, and it just gets longer and longer. So I'm not here to get on a sandbox, just to approach this with a lot of caution. I think the question that I want to ask is, it's all a zero-sum game, how much time is in a school day. And given what I was reading in the supporting materials about how much time is presently going to physical activity or education, for many school districts, presumably they're under that threshold. And so with passage of this bill, they would have to reach this threshold. Have you had conversations with the public education community about what the, if you will, opportunity cost would be, what would be displaced out of the day to accommodate this requirement?
Through the chair, Representative Kreis-Tompkins. I haven't personally, I know Representative Rasmussen has, so I don't want to speak on conversations that I haven't been a part of, but I can have her follow up.
We will be bringing this bill back again, so there will be opportunity. Additional questions from committee at this time? Okay, seeing none, we have some invited testimony. Actually, let me call on Todd Brocious first. Todd, are you with us?
Madam Chair, I am with you.
Thank you, Todd. If you have any comments to make on any of the questions you may have heard here in the last few minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Todd Brocious. I am the School Health and Safety Education Administrator for the Department of Education. And just in reference to a couple of the questions that came up before, primarily the responsibility for participation, the responsibility to decide whether or not to participate and then to implement play day would really fall with districts, so the department wouldn't have an active role in that, so I wanted to clarify that issue. And also, the department does not track the number of schools or districts that offer credit for participation in athletics or extracurricular physical activities. So we don't know the statewide impact of that. Are there additional things I can clarify?
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Brocious, do you have any sense of how many K through 8 programs across the state already have 60 minutes of daily activity for students?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Hannon, we do not know the number of districts. I think there's wide variability from what we know in how physical activity is implemented and the exact number of minutes that are offered.
And follow-up,
Representative Hannon.
Currently, the bill has a zero fiscal note, but and not regarding the play day section, but the daily physical activity. Would this bill require Department of Education Early Childhood Development to do some kind of monitoring of 54 school districts and hundreds of schools across the state to see if they're in compliance?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Hannon, the way the House Bill 70 is written, it does not explicitly require the department to have a compliance or kind of enforcement role. So we really wouldn't know, and nor would we be actively checking with districts to ensure compliance. That would just be a district-level responsibility.
Thank you, Representative Hannon and Mr. Brocious. And I'd also like to point out that the fiscal note, of course, applies to the department, not to the schools. If there was a requirement, it would reflect on tasks that the department would have to do. But I think we need to hear from school districts at some point regarding their perception of what the cost might be. Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
My question for the department is whether the department has a position on the bill.
Mr. Brocious?
Through the chair, Representative Kreis-Tompkins, the department has not taken a position on the bill.
Okay, Representative Klayman and then Representative Jackson.
I'd actually make a request to the bill sponsor before the next hearing that they get a letter, either a letter or get someone from the Anchorage School District to appear at the next hearing to provide the Anchorage School District's position on it. And particularly, I'd like to know what the Anchorage School District's perspective would be on the impact on curriculum and costs to them, and whether on the K-8 schools, how many are in compliance with these guidelines today, and how many are not in compliance with these guidelines today.
Thank you, Representative Klayman. Representative Jackson.
Thank you. Through the chair. So with the supporting documents on this bill connecting physical activity to academic grades, I'm just curious if we already have a state law requiring the daily amount of physical activity, why it is not being monitored or enforced. Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that last comment about why are we not monitoring, you know, we keep throwing more and more on the school districts, and they have to send in more and more reports of their activities and their things that they're doing, and that's one of the reasons that the administration in school districts has grown so much, because we keep pushing more and more report requirements back on them. So, yeah, I don't want to see us adding more.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Kreis-Tompkins? Okay, all right. Let's see. Seeing no more questions from the committee at this time, we have some invited testimony on this bill from Denali Daniels. Ms. Daniels, are you on the line?
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Members of the committee, can you hear me?
Good morning, Denali. Would you please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you. My name is Denali Daniels, and I'm here representing my company, Denali Daniels & Associates. We provide facilitation, strategic planning, and policy research to our clients, and our clients are typically nonprofit, government, and small business in Alaska. We have offices in Anchorage and Juneau. And back in 2014, my team conducted research on behalf of the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. That work is in the public domain and has been widely circulated. I must be clear that I do not represent the state through my comments. I represent the work that my team did back in 2014. So I have some brief comments that are kind of associated with a PowerPoint, so hopefully my droning on, if I appear to be droning on, I'm happy to be interrupted, Madam Chair, so I'm not sure how my statistics are going to come across without the visual, but I'm happy to provide follow-up as well.
Okay, one moment, Ms. Daniels. I'm confused. Yeah. You mentioned a PowerPoint?
No, I'm sorry. I'm providing comments that I've provided previously with a PowerPoint. So since you do not have the PowerPoint in front of you, feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions that don't make sense since you don't have the visual in front of you.
Okay, yeah, and can you provide that at some point?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, let's dive into the research. The genesis of our work was based on the obesity problem in Alaska, and many of the folks around the table there probably are aware that Alaska spends $459 million annually on direct health care costs associated with obesity. 77% of adults and 26% of high school age Alaskans are obese. And as it relates to your discussion today, the Center for Disease Control has tied academic performance to physical activity. And while we all know there is a connection between obesity and physical activity, our research was focused specifically on recess and PE policies in school districts. So the Center for Disease Control recommends 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity per day for school-aged kids. And for PE, the National Association of Sport and Physical Education recommends 150 minutes each week of physical education at the elementary level and 225 minutes each week at the secondary level. There are two noteworthy federal policies that we should be familiar with. Number one, the 2004 Child Nutrition and WIC Reauthorization Act, that established a requirement for wellness policies as a condition for the school meal program eligibility. And then second, the 2010 Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act made efforts to define model wellness policies. So those are a couple of federal policies that I think are important for us to understand as we consider the state policies. So I'm going to chat a little bit about the framework of our work. It was a two-part project. The first part was a survey of all 54 school districts. We asked 29 questions about the status of their wellness policies and specifically around PE and recess time, both in policy and in practice. Second, we collected all of the wellness policies that we could, and we conducted a policy analysis of the strength of the PE and recess elements of those policies using a coding scheme established by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We were proud to have accomplished a 100% response rate for the survey that we conducted, and I would also just note that we did include Mount Edgecombe in the number 54. If you look at the report, do you see the number 53? That's probably because it was a question that did not apply to high school, and Mount Edgecombe was not included there. So I'm going to just share some high-level statistics that came from both Part 1 and Part 2 before I conclude, and then I'm happy to follow up. There's quite a bit of data that resulted, and so I could go on. But as it relates to House Bill 70, which, as I understand, only applies to K-12. So let's talk about recess. So let's talk about the survey. Only 32% of districts told us that their elementary schools have written policies, and only 6% of districts said their middle schools have written policies. When we go on to ask whether they have unwritten recess practices, over half of the districts said both elementary and middle schools don't have written policies, but they do have unwritten practices. So that's a disconnect that emerges as we talk about policies versus practices. And then finally, there are school districts that say they have no policies at all. So 10 districts said they had no policies or practices. So let's talk about PE. When asked about written PE policies, school districts reported much higher incidence of written policies, 53% respectively for elementary and middle school reported having written PE policies. But here again, we see a sizable number of unwritten practices. What is surprising to me is to see that there are districts that say their schools have no PE policies that are written or unwritten. There are five districts that said their elementary school schools did not have any policies or practices, and seven districts said none at the middle school. And remember, these are districts, not schools. So we haven't actually gone back and counted the number of schools, but you can imagine we're probably talking about a number of kids here. So that's what I pulled from the survey piece. Shifting gears to the policy analysis, we were able to successfully collect 51 of the 54 school district wellness policies, either through finding them online or by collecting them as we were conducting the survey of the school districts. And then we scored them using the Robert Wood Johnson methodology. And I can talk a little bit more about that, but I'm just going to jump into the results. So if folks have questions about that methodology, just let me know. So 33% of Alaska school districts either did not have a policy or had a policy that had not been updated since 2007. So remember, 2007 was after the new federal requirement was in place for the school lunch program, but before the 2010 Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, which established model policies. So we can look back in time and kind of see where things lined up in terms of federal policies and how school districts responded to those requirements, or recommendations, rather. Again, we only pulled a few results here to share with this body, and I'm going to end with the recess policy responses. 50% of districts indicated there were no recess policies, and 100% indicated no policies were written for middle school. And then in terms of PE, while 40% of districts don't have PE policies for elementary, there are 60% of our school districts that do have policies. Also, 91% of all school districts reported having unwritten practices at the elementary level. And certainly that's not necessarily a bad thing. We just don't know what's really going on there. And for middle school, it's close, having 58% written policies and 83% unwritten policies. We have a lot of anecdotal responses as well, and I won't get into that. So in conclusion, at least in 2014, which of course was 5 years ago, we did hear anecdotally from school districts as we were conducting this research the importance that they value physical activity. But there seems to be a hesitance to put minutes into policies and formally schedule this time during the day. There is a dramatic disconnect between written policies and practice. And there appears to be a need for further exploration on how to best encourage school districts to adopt written policies for PE and recess in elementary and middle school. So just in setting this work aside, I'd like to personally express my support for House Bill 70. As a lifelong Alaskan, a former fitness instructor, and a mom, I know firsthand how helpful physical activity can be to our well-being. And that concludes my comments for today. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can or follow up outside of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. I apologize. I'd like to note that on basis for House Bill 70 is your complete report, the 52-page report. But that's, we weren't going to print that for everybody's binders today. But I'm still having trouble tracking down the PowerPoint, Ms. Daniels. If you could make sure that we have that at some point, I would appreciate it.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Daniels, you probably said at the beginning, but I missed it. Who was your study done for in 2014? And I guess that's my first question.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I did indicate that the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services hired my firm to conduct the research. The research has been part of the public domain since then and has been a public document. My comments do not represent the state of Alaska, so I think that's important to know.
Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
through the chair, do you know when the last state curriculum overview of physical education policies for school district was done by the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I don't immediately know the answer to that question.
Representative Hannon, go ahead.
Thank you. Was your report in 2014 just given to district-level administration, or were physical education teachers and the Physical Education Teachers Association contacted to participate?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we would start at the administration level. There were instances in which we were referred to the other individuals that you noted there. So it was a wide spectrum depending on the situation at the school district and who is the most appropriate person to answer the question.
Yeah, go ahead, Representative Hannah.
Thank you. And where you said that safe wellness policy, that 50% of schools that responded had no recess policy, do you have any idea whether they were exceeding the standards of minutes of recess, even though they didn't have a written policy, or was there the opportunity for them to respond anything more than a yes or no or attach compliance?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I would say that the policy analysis portion of our work, and also we had questions about practices versus policies, certainly suggests that there are a number of school districts that, while they may not have policies in place to meet the minimum recommendations of the CDC, that certainly practices are occurring, but we only know that anecdotally.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
Thank you very much. And I sort of alighting on the comment about the disconnect between practice and policy, although I was sort of thinking about that comment in different context. And I know the bill relates to K through 8, and this is sort of highly anecdotal, and my question wants to try to get away from anecdotes and get into more sort of, I don't know, grounded evidence. But my recollection, and I guess to some extent observation, is that when you're talking about physical activity and recess, that there is a something of a correlation between younger kids being out on the playground and actually being active and moving around and getting real physical activity. But then when you get a little bit older, like middle school, which I can still remember, that correlation maybe diminishes or erodes. And I'm trying to sort of home in on the outcomes of the goal of this bill is active and healthy kids. And the means to that goal is requiring physical activity time. Sort of how effective a tool is that, both with elementary school students and also middle school students? In other words, is there any analysis on if you require X minutes of recess or whatever for, say, middle school students, what percentage of those kids are actually going to be moving around and active versus sitting around on the wall talking about who's dating whom?
Anyone else?
That's a question.
Okay. Ms. Daniels?
Through the chair, Representative Kreis-Tompkins, I don't actually recall getting to that level of detail, but it's certainly possible that the many sources that our work conducted through our initial review does have that research, and so I'm certainly happy to take a peek back and see if there's anything that directly relates to your question there.
Follow up.
Go ahead, Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
And this is a request for perhaps the sponsor's office or perhaps Ms. Daniels or whomever, but it seems like if we all want to accomplish this goal, that fact or statistic is highly relevant, and I don't expect there to be an Alaska-specific statistic, but surely Robert Wood Johnson Foundation or some national entity that studies physical activity, you know, sort of has some notion that, you know, if we're going to require recess, well, here's what percentage of students are actually going to be active in terms of getting their desired outcome. And I'd love to know that if we're going to sort of further consider a mandate.
Agreed. Representative Jackson, question for Ms. Daniels.
Through the chair, you know, listening to the mandate requiring kids to play or have activities, who's to say they don't play, like, once they get home and how, you know, often they do? Because to go back to my childhood, it would, my parents had to drag us in from playing. So, you know, it just appears to be a thin line between, you know, mandating through Department of Education, and like Representative Thompson said, they have plenty of reports to give us. But it's almost like we're disregarding the activity they have outside of school. Thank you.
And any other questions for Ms. Daniels? I just have one. Ms. Daniels, was your report presented to the Department of Health and Social Services, perhaps through the legislature, through another bill hearing or a lunch and learn, where it might be archived for the committee to take a look at?
To the chair, in 2014, when our work was completed, there were no formal presentations at that time. Later, in 2016, I believe it was, Senator Costello sponsored a bill, Senate Bill 200, and during that process, there were a number of occasions in which we presented the findings of our work, and so there should be an archive of that. But to my knowledge, we didn't do a lunch and learn or any other outreach when the initial report was released.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Let's see. Seeing no further questions for Ms. Daniel, thank you. I'm going to open public testimony for House Bill 70 right now. We have a couple of people online. Public testimony is now open. We have Kelly Lessons online from Anchorage. Ms. Lessons, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, very well. Thank you. Great. Go ahead, put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Good morning. My name is Kelly Lessons, L-E-S-S-E-N-S. I'm a parent in the Anchorage School District, and I'm also a co-founder of the Anchorage-based Recess and Lunch Advocacy Group, ASD 60. And for the record, Mr. Revac is my representative. My daughter is at Trailside Elementary School. I'm here today because I care about the overall environment in which all of Alaska's children learn. HB 70, as you guys have sort of probed, intends to improve current statute established in 2016, which merely requires districts to establish guidelines promoting a certain amount of physical activity. And it also permits some of that time to be comprised of in-class activities. One of you asked about what the Anchorage School District requires, and currently their guidelines are for 100 minutes a week of recess and 90 minutes a week of PE. That falls quite short, certainly by 80 minutes, of the current suggestion of 54 minutes a day. So the wording of this bill is supposed to ameliorate that problem. I also want to talk about the quality of physical activity. Right now, letting things like in-class activities count, say sharpening a pencil, pivoting on a rug, or standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, that's not really getting to what the CDC has in mind as meeting 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous quality of activity that all children need. So I would urge you to expand the total of minutes here allocated to physical activity to 60 minutes, which is what a proposed amendment to SB 56 is asking for. That would also follow CDC guidelines. And to clarify that the time required for such physical activity may include physical education and opportunities for unstructured physical activity like recess. Such wording in HB 70 would promote a fiscally prudent and socially equitable means to to increase learning efficiency statewide. As you guys have talked about, the fiscal note of the bill is zero, and frankly, for districts, additional costs should be minimal. I want you to really understand that recess should be considered an extension of classroom learning. So you could have a teacher-supervised recess or additional amounts of that at zero additional cost. The American Academy of Pediatrics has explained that recess, like no other time in a child's day, enables students to develop their executive function, improve their social-emotional learning, and improve the quality of their peer-to-peer relationships. My daughter is a second grader. I told the school board here in Anchorage that for like 4 months, she and her friends invented this game with rules called Baby Nora. And, you know, they had to behave in certain manners, and there was tag involved, and they could be mildly transgressive. And just the way that they thought about this extended game, I think, is a great example of how kids make plans. They are creative, they use up their energy, and they come back to class really ready and reinvigorated, ready to learn. So I want to underscore that not only is this bill affordable, but it deals with the question of justice and equity. As part of my work with this organization, ASD60, we have a pretty complete website. It's asd60.org. I have personally charted. I've called and contacted every school in Anchorage, every elementary school, and I've asked how much time they allocate to recess and lunch. The uncomfortable fact here is that schools serving predominantly poor students and students of color grant lower amounts of time for recess and, frankly, lunch than their whiter and or more off, more well-off counterparts do. This echoes studies nationwide where urban schools and schools where 75% of students receive free lunch get less recess than rural or suburban schools. Because the Alaska legislature is constitutionally responsible for ensuring the quality and equity of all students' educations, I'm pretty sure that all of Alaska's kids deserve evidence-based, state-secured safeguards in this respect. I know that lots of people like to emphasize the importance of local control, both at the district and classroom level, but the question about whether the state of Alaska has any business telling districts how much time to allot to physical activity through recess and PE is really disingenuous. Just like we don't leave questions of wearing seatbelts or being able to drive under the influence up to local jurisdiction, establishing statewide evidence-based minimums to promote the health, well-being, and learning environments of all students should not be left to local control. Finally, allocating valuable time in a school day to recess and PE is not an issue of how much academic time we might be losing. Recess and PE counter rates of obesity, a growing crisis whose financial implications cost the state of Alaska millions of dollars each year. They also bolster academic outcomes, improve classroom behaviors, and make learning more efficient. And, you know, Mr. Craig Tompkins, you asked about how effective this bill might be. There is a program in Texas called the LINK study. It's L-I-I-N-K. And from what it does is it gives kids 4 15-minute recesses throughout the day. It emulates Finland. And what they have seen is that when kids get into the practice of going out and playing, coming back and getting refreshed, they actually incorporate more physical activity into their own after-school activities that they do of their own volition. And I think in an era where so many kids have smartphones and digital devices and they're going home and they're just doing those things for a couple of hours a day, anything we can do to promote that physical activity within schools to get it to be a better practice, a habit, is a really valuable thing to do. Finally, I can think about the question, this question of social justice level, but if I'm thinking as a parent selfishly, my daughter's own ability to focus in school hinges on the fact that on some days, her classmates are just too wiggly to sit still. And although my son is still in preschool, I basically know that both of my kids' educational experiences are going to be more efficient, enjoyable, and effective if the state ensures that all children have daily evidence-based and equitable access to the moderate to vigorous physical activity that the CDC says they need to be healthy and which can only come from recess or PE. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lessons. I also appreciate your thorough letter that we have in our packets. We have Carrie Carpenter, also on the phone in the Anchorage LIO. Ms. Carpenter, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Please give us your name and affiliation for the record, and put your go ahead and begin your testimony.
Okay,
my name is Terry Carpenter, and I am with the group ASD 60 that Kelly had mentioned, the grassroots group of parents that are concerned about the amount of time that children are getting for lunch and recess in the Anchorage School District. So I'm a parent of two kids at Sand Lake Elementary School in Anchorage, and I'm a young adult cancer survivor that understands the importance of health. I support HB 70. Last year, on the first day of school, my kids reported back to me that recess had been cut. I was shocked because recess and PE improves learning. It improves physical, emotional, and psychological health. After spending time researching all of this, I found significant amounts of data that support this. This activity mandate is necessary because the 3 years since the physical activity law was passed, many districts have not changed anything that actually results in kids getting more physical activity. Currently, my kids get only 2 days of PE a week. So that means on 3 days a week, they get out of their 6.5 hour day, my 8-year-old has one 20-minute recess break. She's 8. Schools can still freely cut recess. Alaska kids deserve the best in education and opportunity in life. My 8-year-old daughter, like every student like her that sits through a 6.5 hour day with only 20 minutes of recess, needs us to speak up for them. Some districts in Alaska are making physical activity a priority. They see the connection that it has to better education. Reports show that more physically active students have better grades and better attendance at school. Some schools are doing it right, but children that don't have the choice to pick where they live or what school they go to, they deserve equal access to those same benefits. This bill is a path towards improving learning and health, which all Alaska kids need. The issue is so important in the lives of children now and for their future. We need to make sure that districts across Alaska are doing the right thing for our kids. Thank you for your time and your service to our state.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carpenter. Also note that you have a letter in our packet. Thank you. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify? No one online. Anyone in the room who wishes to testify on HB 70?
I want to ask Ms. Carpenter a question.
We have some time. She may be gone. Ms. Carpenter, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead. Representative Hannon has a quick question for you.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Carpenter, in your letter, you say that you speak to, at the bottom of the first page, a school with nearly 700 elementary students in it. Can you tell me you earlier talking about your children yourself in the Anchorage School District, but that does not identify in that. So could you tell me what school district and what school you're referencing?
Yeah, so that's for the Anchorage School District, and my kids go to the largest school in the state of Alaska, which is Sand Lake Elementary School, and that school this year, I believe, has 670 students at it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. Anyone else in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 70? Hearing none, I'm going to close public testimony. Any further discussion from committee members on House Bill 70 today? Representative Jackson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Listening to the testimonies, it almost seems like more than one day is being requested. So I don't know if there should be an amendment for one day a week, because it sounds like the parents are asking for more. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Jackson. Seeing no further discussion from committee members today, I'm going to set this bill aside, and we'll take it up in the future. Our next House Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting is scheduled for Thursday, April 4th at 8 a.m. in this room. We will be taking up House Bill 32 again and hearing for the first time House Bill 81, Prohibit Plastic Retail Bags, by Representative Josephson, and House Bill 60, Repeal Senior Benefits, from the Governor's Office. Are there any questions or comments from the committee? Hearing none, we are adjourned at 9:34 a.m.